We begin at the first mishnah of the Masechta. So the opening sugya spends a lot of time dealing with the reason for the mishnah. We'll begin by reading the mishnah. It's a very interesting way, as was noted, to begin the Masechta. It's not the way one would have intuitively done so, but this is the way nature of Shas as well. It's almost as if you're, as I said last week, you're walking in the middle of a conversation. The mishnah says that I may be getting the Medina Sayam. So Shulam Rabbanu Nechav. Comment about the word get itself. Tosis points out here, the word get itself doesn't necessarily mean a get isha, it can also mean any kind of a shtar. Stam, when we use the word get, it usually means that. Tosis does point out that there are occasions where the Gemara will take the term and just assume that it, even though it could have been get isha, it refers to actually all shtaras. There are certainly mishnayos, a get makushar and a get pashur, the last parak of Baba Basra. Certainly he's talking about not getting per se, they're talking about shtaros in general. So here it was obvious enough, they didn't say I maybe get Isham and Dina Sayam. The other interesting thing Tosis talks about, which is I would have thought off topic, but this way they chose to talk about it, because the word is, our practice is our get, and we write 12 lines. Our get is written in 12 lines. And there are two interpretations that are broached here in Tosos. One of them is that the gematria of get is 12, Gimel and Tes. And the other interpretation that is suggested, quoted from the Gaonim actually, of Haigon and of Sadiagon, is that a get is called a sacred krisus. It's something that cuts or divides. And the halacha is that between tzvarim, between chumashim, when you write them in one scroll, which we do, sefer Torah, you are required to have four blank lines. And therefore, the sum of the blank lines that actually divide up chumash are 12, because there are three divisions. Now, I know that immediately. Shemi Smayon, did you see this Tosis?
Rabbi Rath talked about it.
I got it. So of course, this may seem trivial, but I believe it's actually not trivial. The problem, of course, is that there are either five or seven chumashim in our tradition. There are seven chumashim in our tradition, since the word chumash is like chumash apakudim, means a fifth. That's why it's called a chumash. I don't recall the Shvias, there would be seven Shvias is in our Chumash. There's a tradition that the Vayi Ben Tzaharon, which is written between the Nurim Hafuchim, is it Sefer Bifnei Atzma. And therefore, you have actually three books in Sefer Dvarim, in Sefer Bamidbar. So you have Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim. I just want to point out, as Derech Agav, since I don't teach this in the Bible anymore, since I don't teach into the Bible, is those are not the Jewish names of the Chumashim. The Jewish names of the Chumashim are actually Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Those are actually the traditional names. And Moshe is looking at me like, what planet do I come from? Three of them are mentioned that I know of in rabbinic literature, Torah, Kohanim, Chumash HaPakudim, and Mishneh Torah. That's Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and the Rishonim already called, and if the Gemara uses the term Sefer Yetzirah and Sefer Agula, that's Genesis and Exodus. I don't know when the names Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra, and Dvarim came into being, but those are not really the traditional names. If you want to be firm, you say it's in Exodus. Anyway, there's an Akamina, by the way, that of there being a seventh Sefer, because there is a din that Svarim are Mitamin Esayadayim. If you have Sefer Kodesh Mitamin Esayadayim, it's a Masechta, it's a chunk of the Masechta, it's part of the Masechta Shadayim, not the whole Masechta, but a piece of the Masechta, the third and fourth Prakim, the second half of the Masechta deals with it extensively. And the Gemara Shabbos in the first parak explains it was one of the Yud Ches Tavar that the Beis Shammai won the day, and they would go there, that Svarma Mitzama Nesayadayim, because people would say, they would take Truma, the purpose was Truma, to protect Truma, and people would say Zekodesh or Zekodesh, so they would put the truma with the svarim, and the mice would come find the food, and they'd chew through the svarim. So in order to prevent that from happening, they declared that the svarim are metamis the truma first, I think, and then they would metamis the daim as a second stage of the zera, therefore people won't put the food with the svarim, and the svarim will not be eaten by the mice. Personal mice, although I don't know for sure, so we bought a Sefer Torah. My wife and I bought a used Sefer Torah during the pandemic. I had it stored in a shul on the Lower East Side for probably a very, very long time. And there was one piece that it seemed had been eaten out by a rodent. It was at the end of Parshas Eidev, Koma Koma Shev Tidro Kach Vav Lechem Vav Lechem Yeh, which was very symbolic. And And in that, so the sofer put a patch on the behind, and I filled in, you know, when we were used there for the first time, I filled in a leg of the hay or something that I finished the Sefer Torah. And if any of you at some point, God willing, you come to our house for Hanukkah Masiba or before then or something like that. And if you want, you look in the Aron that we have, and there's a poem on the back. I wrote a piyut that was printed on the back of the mantle. And there's a line in there. I'm supposed to write an explanation for this piyut, but there's a line in there which is Mishnei Shmona Yochleini. It's a slight paraphrase of a pasuk. But what does Mishnei Shmona Yochleini mean? Frank, did I tell you what this means? It means the second of eight. Now, of course, I don't have proof that it was a mouse, but I assume if Eddie wrote it, he would. Most likely it was a mouse. So anyway, our bottom line is that they made a takana that's Sfarim HaMatamei Seidayim, and what is the definition of a sefer? So what happens, you can have a sefer, but letters got erased. So I think they say if there are 85 letters left in the Sefer, it's Betamei Seidayim, because Vayihi ben Sa'aron, that parsha, is 85 letters, so that's a Sefer Shalem. So even if you have a Sefer which is not complete, it's missing most of its letters, but there are 85 letters left, it's still Betamei Seidayim. After that, it's no longer Betamei Seidayim. So anyway, the halacha is that you have to have, we assume there are 5 from Ashram for now, and the number of lines in between each chumash is supposed to be 4. Now, of course, if you do the arithmetic and the laws of higher mathematics, so 4 times 4 is 16, that's not 12. But they say that if you don't count the last one, you don't count the Bamidbar to Tvarim, that gap is not counted, because Tosis uses the language, Mishneh Torah l'chashish eina l'choseh v'shonah mashal l'malam, which is not a crazy idea, because that's what Mishneh Torah, at least that's the pshat in what the words mean, it's actually this week's parsha. Always this week's parsha, next week's parsha, last week's parsha, and in this week's parsha, the chasavos mishnei haTorah hazos. So Rashi quotes two pshatim. One is that the Noach has two svarim; he has to have two sefer Torah. A hedyot, everybody else only needs to have one sefer Torah, but the Noach needs to have two sefer Torah. But the pshat is mishnei haTorah hazos, refers to probably mishnei Torah, this repetition of the Torah. So we don't count dvarim, and this is actually relevant from another perspective. I'd like to say is I always ask the question, what is the earliest commentary on Tanakh? So for starters, Nevi'im and Ksuvim are occasionally commentaries on Chumash. There are passages in Torah, not too many, but which are quoted, one of these quoted explicitly in Nevi'im, and it's actually used by one of the Rishonim as a proof. It's a very important tshuva. The pasuk of Lo Yimsu Avos Avanu Bo Nimsu Nos Ish B'Chatayim Asu, which is next week's parsha, always this week's, next week's or last week's parsha. So that pasuk is quoted in a story in Sefer Malachim, and then again in Devar HaYamim, how when one of the kings was assassinated, his son, when he took the throne, he killed the assassins, but he didn't kill the assassins' children. And the reason that's important is because that proves, even though I don't think we needed this, the Rashba writes this in a tshuva, that proves that Pshuto Shel Mikra in that pasuk is not the way Chazal Darshan Halacha, which is Egos Krovim is Psulim, that a parent cannot be put to death on the basis of the egos of a child, but rather the pshat in the pasuk is a parent cannot be put to death for the sin of a child and vice versa. And it's relevant by the sugya psula edus rabbanon, whether that works at the raisa level or the rabbanon level, it's a fun shuvah. But the Rashba, right, I think it's he saying that. He's quoting quotes of the riff, but I think the Rashba just points out that pshuto Shel Mikra has to be that you don't kill a child-parent for the sins of the others, not on the basis of the testimony. And the testimony, drasha, is only the very self of it, Torah Shabbal Peh. So there are something more famously, also last week's parsha, Parshas Re'eh, Torah says that when you break the Korban Pesach, how do you prepare the Korban Pesach? You pay attention to the last Aliyah yesterday? If you weren't, you'll hear it again on Shemini Atzeres, if you're lucky enough to be in Chutz La'aretz. Which is Ubi Shal Tavi Achalta. There's only one problem. You're not allowed to cook the Korban Pesach. Al Tochlu Menuna Uvashel Mugushal B'Mayim. It's a very famous contradiction, and the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim resolves with Tira. It says Vayivashlu Pesach Ba'Esh. So Bishul can even be called when you're roasting directly over the fire. So you have passages in the Nevi'im and Ksuvim which are interpretations of Sukkot and Chumash. But I would like to add that I think the earliest biblical commentary anywhere is Sefer Dvarim. The Sefer Dvarim, on some level, is a commentary on earlier parts of Chumash, because it's Moshe Rabbeinu's commentary. Kadosh Baruch Hu proved it's being placed in the Torah, but many of the Shonim say the Gemara says it's the Feirush. Some may push back, and the Ramban also makes this clear in his Hakdama He implies this very clear. Sakhtamat Advarim, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Sefer Advarim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the approval to put it in the Sefer Torah, but it's Moshe Rabbeinu's language. So on a pshat level, it's an interpretation of that which came earlier. So that's why we don't count Sefer Advarim in this cheshbon. So they're really four chamashim. Four chamashim is three divisions. Three divisions times four is 12 blank lines. A Sefer Krisus, that's what cuts between the Sefer Torah. Hence our Ged has 12 lines. I don't know, I'm not a Baki in Hilchskitten, I don't do Gittin, but I have to imagine that Lamaisa, that if someone wrote again in 13 lines, it's still Kasha. I'm sure that you will not find a get written in 13 lines, not any get in the last X hundred years, because all the Sofrim follow this. And I'm sure that all the Sofrim know exactly which word starts which line. You know, once they adopted the Sofrim, again, the Sofrim who write get. Okay. There are a lot of interpretations, by the way, that are given, I'll say, post facto for practices that emerged. One that I happen to remember, I was stuck in my head from Melech Shechter, Zichrono Lecha, Rav Shechter's father, when he taught us on Eben Ezer, was that we write, in a ksuba, we write Lechodesh such and such. But in a get, you write Leyerach Ploni. And he said, told us, because the minhag comes because of the pasuk in Buzasa Bracha, which is Umimeged Gerash Yerachim. So when you have Gerashim, you write Yerach. Okay. Anyway, so the going back to the Mishnah, so the Mishnah says if you bring again the Medina Sayam, Rashi here at Medina Sayam is everywhere but Babel. It's odd that Rashi should write that, most of the Rishonim jump all over him, because Medina Sayam is chosen here to mean far away places. It's all Chutz Laaretz, but not every Chutz Laaretz place is far away, and that's why the Mishnah subsequently will debate Kfar Lodin Lod, and what was the other one? Rechem and Cheger, which were obviously places that were very adjacent to Eretz Yisrael, and the Tanna Kamma doesn't consider them to be Medina Sayam, the Tanna, even though they do not have Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. So in general, when you, and they have some material in this parak actually deals with this, particularly when we talk about the status of Surya in Halacha, different land areas can have different statuses with respect to being Eretz Yisrael. You can have something that's Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, you can have something that is, we might say, part of Eretz Yisrael, but they didn't give it the Kedusha the second time around when they came back from Babel, but the Kedusha Shniyah didn't get. And you can have things that have Eretz Yisrael been for one thing, but not for other things. So, anyway, for our Mishnah's purposes, the Tanna Kamma believes that there are places that are very, very close to Eretz Yisrael, so much so that we don't treat them as Medina Sayam for these purposes. Okay. So that's the Tanna Kamma's position. Rabbi Gamaliel Omer Afa Nevim and Harekam and Menacheger, even from Rekam and Cheger, which are places the Gemara will say towns that are right next to Eretz Yisrael, but they're not surrounded by Eretz Yisrael, they're not Muflaos. And Rabbi Eliezer Omer Afilu Mikvar Ludim Lalod. He says even Farlodah was apparently Mubla, so it was surrounded on three sides by Eretz Yisrael. And he says he and Rabbi Gamaliel both say they don't agree with each other, but they say in these particular cases that you have to say Befarei Nechtam, Befarei Nechtam. Tanna Kamma believes that you don't. And then Vachachamim Omer Einet Tzarech Sheomer Befarei Nechtam, Befarei Nechtam. El Hamehi Lemedina Sein Hamolah. Vachachamim disagree at least with the two preceding Panoim. And they say no. Rekem and Chager and Karlodim, you do not have to say Befarei Nechtam, Befarei Nechtam. The only question will be only from Medina Sayam to Eretz Yisrael and Hamolech, if you bring it from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz. In other words, it goes in both directions. Here's an important literary and halachic question. It's more seen from a literary perspective. How many opinions are there in the Mishnah? The Gemara is going to posit there are actually four. Who are the four opinions? Tanna Kamma, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, and the Chachamim. Now, one of the things that's very common when the Gemara interprets a Mishnah, when you'll have an anonymous Tanna Kamma, and then you have a named Gamora who disagrees, and then you have a Chachamim Omer in X, which often sounds a lot like the Tanna Kamma. You have one about the Madlikim, right? By Chela Mevushal. How does the Mishnah begin? Ein Madlikim, I can't remember what it is. Sitter here? Maybe he's not a sitter. So in the Mishnah there, b'chachamim omer echad mevushal v'echad shein mevushal in ma'bikav, I think is the end. So you have a Tanna Kamma, and then who says that you can't light with the chayim mevushal? Nacham Amadi says that ma'bikav chayim mevushal, b'chachamim omer echad mevushal v'echad shein ma'bikav. And what the Gemara will typically do is to explain that there are actually three opinions. You and I might have read the Mishnah and said, oh, it's a machlokas. There's only two opinions here. the Tanakhama and Nachal Amadi, and the Chacham and Basra are the Tanakhama. They're just responding, no, you're wrong. And the Gemara then often has to find an afghanina between the two of them. Sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's so difficult, I believe in that case, the Maman Adlishman, the Gemara comes up with some particular nafgamina, and I think it says Lomasaimi. We're not sure who holds which. There is, to be shown and pointed out, there's a klal that the Gemara often works with, that the Tanakh Basra, the Chacham Radiyan, Kam Lahosif, Latfuye. But sometimes it's impossible to kind of figure out what that is. So the Gemara comes up with nafgamina, and I think in that case it's Lomasaimi. Which means it's obviously not being derived from the text itself. It doesn't emerge from the text, because if it emerged from the text, you would know who held which. It's just there has to be a difference between them. We think this is the difference. One of them says X, one of them says Y. This mission is particularly interesting, because one could have actually argued that it's not that the Chachamim at the end and the Tanakhama are this one and the same. No. There are only three opinions in the mission. The first part of the Mishnah is, HaMevi get Mevdiyasayan, Serach Shem Mabafanayimlecha Rafanayimlecha, colon. That everybody agrees to. If you bring a gift from Medina Sayyam, so you have to say b'fanei nechta. Now the question is, what are the parameters of this? So Rabbi Gamliel says that when we say Medina Sayyam, it includes even Rechem and Chayke. And Rabbi Eliezer said it even includes even Karlodi. And the Chachamim disagree with the two of them and say, no, it's only Medina Sayyam, really a faraway place, and by the way, Moldach also. Now, part of the question, at least on a shot level of the Mishnah, is what is Hamolach part of the argument or not? Would Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Gamliel disagree with Hamolach? And the answer is possibly not, because you might be reading and then the Mishnah of Hamolach is really going back to the original part of the Mishnah. Hamevi get Mishnah and Hamolach, but everybody could agree to that. There is an interesting yes,
Jake. Could we argue that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Gamliel either one is building off the other, one they disagree with something?
Well, they do disagree on something small. That's what the Gemara will say about that.
Isn't there one adding off the other?
Well, yeah, one is it because he says off. In other words, one of them says, the simple reading of the Mishnah is Rabbi Gamliel says that if the town is adjacent to Eretz Yisrael, then it doesn't matter. It's considered Medina Sayyam. But if the town is swallowed up on three sides, it's not just that it's one side of boundary, but it's literally enveloped, but it doesn't have Kedusha, then it doesn't require it. And Rabbi Eliezer comes along and says, no, if it's chutzlar, even if it's mudlah, it still requires panei nechta, panei nechta. That I think both pshat and I think how the Gemara reads it. But the question of how to read, is it statement and colon 1, 2, 3, or is it four opinions? So the Gemara seems to take it as four opinions. If you want an interesting analog to this, if any of you learned Baba Metzia, the first Mishnah, which is Shtayim Ofsa Metalis, Zelmer ani mitzasiya v'zer ani mitzasiya. Zelmer kula shali v'zelmer kula shali. So yachlokum. Zelmer kula shali v'zelmer achetzi shali. So then zenotel revia and zenotel three quarters. Okay. Now the question the Gemara asks in the opening sugya, and it's really a drush more than it is halacha. I mean, it does make a point, but we don't really need the Mishnah for that. Is why does it say Zelmer ani mitzasiya v'zer ani mitzasiya zelmer kula shali v'zelmer kula shali? Isn't it repetitive? So the Gemara will say, it's two different cases. One is mitzina, one is mechach lememkar. But one of the talmidim of the Gra comments that the pshat in the Mishnah is shnayim ochas v'tala zelmer ani mitzasiya v'zer ani mitzasiya colon. You have two scenarios, subcases. One is zelmer kula shali v'zelmer kula shali, and one is zelmer kula shali v'zelmer chetzer shali. So anyway, this strikes me as being of a sort of a similar type, where the Mishnah may be introducing the topic without taking a very specific, Tanakhama is not necessarily to keep shot, taking a very specific stand, and then the Mishnah offers three different opinions as to what is the scope of this din, or maybe you get into a set, right?
So you can actually say that Rashi is implying that all the subsequent opinions could fit into the language of the Tanakhama of the Din
Esayam. Where do you
see
it, the first Rashi?
You say that any part of Kutzos could be called the
No, but I think he's... the reason why I'm reluctant to load it into Rashi is because I think it's clear from the Gemara on Daf Dalet Amud Beis. I think it's very clear that they take it as Tanakhama and a Tanabasra. So it's not that Rashi doesn't ever explain the Mishnah of Peshuto against the Gemara, but it's not typical. Okay. So we explained already Rabbi Gamliel's position, Rabbi Eliezer, Marfi, and the Kol, the Lod. The Mishnah, which is why did Rabbi Eliezer mention Lod? So Tosha says, because Kfar Lodim and Lod, now they're next to each other, why did you say Hamevi mi Kfar Lodim? But we say, Hamedi Getman Diasayam. We didn't say Hamedi Getman Diasayam Le'eretz Yisrael. So Satosis just said, because Karlodim and Lod, because there are so many B'nai Lod who hang out in Karlodim, you would have thought that this didn't should apply to. That's why it's Karlodim and Lod. But he quotes one of the Balei Tosfos, Rabbeinu Meir, says, no. You know why is this Lod? Because that was Rabbi Eliezer's place. Right? When the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the third parak, this week's parsha, Sadek Tirdov, Jake, you don't believe me. It's always, those who've been around long enough know somehow when the pasuk comes up, it just is that. Sadek Tirdov. So what does the Gemara in Zebor say in Sanhedrin? It says, Halech achar based in Yofa, achar Rabbi Gamliel Leyavne, and after Rabbi Yeshua, I think, Lekaros Noi, and after Rabbi Eliezer Lelod. So that was Rabbi Eliezer's town. So Eliezer said, after Lelod and Lelod. So Tosfos says, he doesn't get makes any sense, because what Rabbi Eliezer shouldn't need to say that. Just as the Mishnah says, Hamedi get, Nimdina Sayam, and where was the Mishnah written? In Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah was written in Eretz Yisrael. That's an undisputed assumption, I believe, by anybody in the world. I don't care how from, how scholarly, how not scholarly. We all agree. The Mishnah is a text that was composed in Eretz Yisrael. So when the Mishnah says, I may be getting the Yerushalayim, it doesn't have to say Eretz Yisrael, because we know where you're bringing it. You're bringing it to. In fact, the word maybe, well, it probably doesn't mean that in this case. Maybe has two meanings. What are the two meanings of maybe? To bring or? No, that would be ba. Oh, come on. That's just how it comes, cause to come. It's a very subtle difference. You know this. I do this, of course, once a year. All right. Do I have to really? Some of you, before I may know, you should be able to do it. What does it mean, cloni lo ol l'bei midrasha? What does it mean, Ephraim? He did not enter the base medrash. You go around, a lot of people tell you, he didn't go up into the base medrash. No such thing. There is no word ol to go up in Aramaic. The word to go up in Aramaic is salat. Like salat, nasach, maskana, salkadai tachamina. The word ol means to enter. It's ayin vav lamed or ayin lamed lamed. It's all over the place. If any of you do targum uklis, most of the time, ayaki savo el aretz, it's not not you will come to the land. Te ol, you will enter the land. It means to come into. In the same way that yatsa can be either to, does it go? Yeah, no. Yes, always means it. It always means absent. Maybe ba can either mean to come or to enter. If you want, anybody know what the Aramaic term for erev Shabbos is in Aramaic? Excellent, ma'alei Shabbata. What does the word ma'alei Shabbata mean? Well, how do you say it at the end of Shabbos? What do we call it? What is it? The bringing out of Shabbos. So what is Ma'alei Shabbata? The bringing in of Shabbos. It's, once you recognize this, it's all over the place, this distinction. But maybe getting in the Asam doesn't, I don't think, means to bring it into Eretz Yisrael from the Asam. I think it means to bring it from, because in all the, all the others, I guess, could theoretically work that way, but I don't think so in this case. But bottom line is, Tosa says, why would he say Lod if that's his place? If that would be the default option. So he says it's far load with load because they're right next to one another and the people are so mixed together, and therefore you would have thought that you don't need to say b'fanei nechtam for whatever the reason the Gemara offers for this tachana, which you all know the machlokas Rav and Rava, but therefore Rabbi Eliezer has to tell you no, even if far load with load. Fine, the chachamim omrim einat zel shemer b'fanei nechtam o b'fanei nechtam ela meivim mendina sayam v'hamolach. And the maybe the medina the medina the minasayam tzarach shiomar b'fanei nechtam b'fanei nechtam. If you transport it between two countries that are outside of Eretz Yisrael, that also requires. And again, according to what we've seen explicitly in the Mishnah, any country the country requires. Right? The Gemara will come up with a reading or a suggested reading. Maybe Rabbi doesn't actually read that way. That the Tanakham and the Mishnah holds that when you bring it from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, you don't need to say b'fanei nechtam. But the Tana Basra for sure holds every country to country transfer requires this. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Afilu Mehegmonia Lehegmonia. What's a hegemon?
According to Rashi, some sort of city district that the people in there are very hostile relations with the others.
Well, what is a hegemon?
A hegemony, like
it's a Greek word, which you know from English, of hegemony, which means dominion or control of. A hegemon was some type of a governor. You might have called them, you know, there's a good, what's the good English term for this? Typically, a hegemon was not necessarily an almighty ruler, but it was more like a thug, a local thug, but he had enough power. What's that?
A warlord.
A warlord. That's a pretty good, I think I like that term. That's a good term for it. I think that sounds to mind, but that's not a bad term. So, like when the Gemara in Ksuvos talks about the, I don't know if it was real actually, there's a big question whether it's real. Primus noctus. You know what primus noctus is? It's a Latin term, the right of the first night, where the ruler in town claimed the right to take the bride the first night. The Gemara in Ksuvos refers, it's not clear it existed in the medieval period. It's not clear how much it was real and how much it was in people's imagination. But the Gemara in Ksuvos interprets, the Bavli interprets a particular line in Tosefta, the Neones, because of the hegemon who comes to the city. That's where you have that word. So the warlord is the good, you know, he's the local criminal who's risen to power, you know, and puts on some airs of actually being in control, which he might be in, to some extent, in reality, but not really officially. So yeah, warlord's a good term. So hegemon, it doesn't matter if it's not a country to country. From one fiefdom to another fiefdom, it's also has to say the fanaynech from the fanaynech. Okay. Then Rabbi Yehuda Omer. So, the Rabbi Yehuda says that he's defining the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Meir disagrees on one detail. What's the problem? The problem is that the cities that Rabbi Yehuda names, Ashkelon and Akko, and Rechem is not as clear because I don't remember if Rechem itself appears in Tanakh and the cities in Yoshua, but Rechem is the translation of Ubein Kadesh Ubein Bared. Where is Ubein Kadesh Ubein Bared? That's by Haggah. So there the Targum translates Ubein Rekam Lechigra. Kadesh is always translated as Rekam. Like Kadesh Barnea, Unglas will have Rekam Ge'a, Rechem. The problem is that at least Ashkelon and Akko in rabbinic literature, and it's also in Yoshua, and maybe even Rechem, are part of Eretz Yisrael. So why does Rabbi Yehuda say it? Rabbi Yehuda says that Ashkelon Darom, Ashkelon Kedarom, Ashkelon is at Chutz Laretz. So how does that fit with the Sukkim that we know, and we have some prices as well? So there are really fundamentally three ways of being the pirates. That's what this very long Tosis is about. If you want to get busy, you can read it. Possibility one is to say that it was only Kitchum Ole Mitzrayim and not Kitchum Ole Baba. That by the time of the Mishnah, it didn't have Kedusha because Eretz Yisrael lost its Kedusha the first time. There's a whole machlokas about Kedusha Lishem or Kitchum Lashaita or Kitchum Lasalavo or Kitchum Lasalavo and whether they had to be Mekadishit again in the time of Ezra. There's a big machlokas about by the Beis Hamikdash about this. The Rambam paskins that Eretz Yisrael lost its kedusha the first time, but its second kedusha was eternal. But the Beis Hamikdash, the Rambam writes, the Makom Hamikdash was kedusha kadosh forever because Shechina lo betela. It's a very powerful line. Others disagree on that, and not surprising the writer disagrees on that. But bottom line is there were cities that Ole Mitzrayim were conquered and were mekadesh that Ole Bava were not mekadesh. And therefore, it could be that even though it's in Sefer Yeshua, one of the cities, it might be that here it's not considered a part of Eretz Yisrael anymore. A second possibility, which is my favorite, which is always to say, oh, there were two Ashkelons. And the Mishnah is talking about one that was a Chutz Laretz, and this time had a different one. And the third possibility, which is where Tosus gets to in the end, sort of, is to say that it might be that it's not strictly a question of whether it has Kedusha Eretz Yisrael. These cities, even though they might have had Kedusha Eretz Yisrael, are so far out there, so far they're out of the center. You know, they're not in the what do they call the main part of, you know, Israel? What's the Azor? The Merkaz. Thank you, the Merkaz. Not part of the Merkaz. So they're so, you know, the, you know, yeshiva's there, you know, Bati Din there. So they're not, you know, whatever it is that for whatever it affects the reason of the Mishnah. So that's another way of sort of getting around the problem. So, you know, it's nothing Kedusha Eretz Yisrael. But rather, it has to do with they were so out of the Merkaz that therefore, whatever Rava and Rama's concerns were applicable to those places. Just an observation that this is the kind of Tosas that if you want to understand, get through the Tosas, you have to first look at all the Gemara's and Tosas quotes, and you really got to learn each one on its own, just make the inference on each Gemara, and then when you go back and read Tosfos, it reads much more easily. Otherwise, it just like makes you dizzy and feel you can't remember where you were. But if you visit, every Tosfos you're supposed to learn the sources like that, but this is the kind of Tosfos that if you don't, it's just going to be one mishmash in your head. If you take out each source and you look at each Gemara and say, okay, the implication of this about Akko is that it is or it's not Eretz Yisrael, then when you get to the end, you can figure out how does the answer answer all of the sources. Now, last comment about these boundaries. It's, of course, there's one boundary that isn't there. And what's that boundary? The West. The reason Rashi says the West is not there is because we know what the Western boundary is, which is actually interesting because we may not know what the Western boundary is because there is a discussion about the Nosim Shaviyam, or the Nisim Shaviyam, which is the islands in the Mediterranean. What is their status? And I believe that there's a Shita. Rashi may mention this in Parshas Maaseh. That's not last week's Parshas. That's why. I don't know if Cyprus falls in, but I think you're supposed to take a line from Hor HaHor and then draw it to the southeasternmost point in Eretz Yisrael, Yanaha Mitzrayim, and anything that would be in there. I don't know what islands they were thinking of. I haven't looked at. I didn't look at the map when I just recently looked at this. So that could have Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, technically speaking. So they really could be western boundary, but whatever. I guess I don't know if they're really Jews there anyway. So be it. The last line of the Mishnah: Maybe get Eretz Yisrael in Otzah Shiyomar b'fanei nichtav b'fanei nechtam v'yeshalach owner yistayim b'chosama. This requires is a very important and difficult process here at the bottom. What the Mishnah says seems to be at least straightforward on the surface if you haven't learned, let's say, Bava Basra or Dine Sharos, which is if someone brings a get in Eretz Yisrael, and the aid doesn't have to say, the Shaliach doesn't have to say, the Fanei Nechtav, you give it to the woman, she's pretty renowned. If Yesh Shalach Orim, which means if the Baal comes and says, hey, something's wrong with that get, I didn't authorize it, whatever it is, so then Yiskayim Bechosamah. Then you'll have to bring the witnesses to verify that these signatures are valid signatures. And Rashi here comments, and Tosfos states more explicitly before going on at length, makes the following observation. Generally speaking, there is something known as kiyum sharos. You'll know it from the Gemara as well, from Rabbi's explanation. And if you got to the Gemara, you know this as well. The din of kiyum sharos is midah oraisa, when you have a shtar that has been signed, we have an expression, Edim HaChasumen Al Ashtar, Nase Kemi Shenech Kera Edusan Bedesim. The Gemara quotes in Gilman Nalf, it's a well-known statement, that when Edim are signed on the Ashtar, it's like you've had Jerishas and Chakiris and Bedesim, we accept the testimony. This may sound like a very nice lumber statement, but it's actually a very, very lumber statement, a very important issue, because there's a big Machlokas HaRishonim. How does Ashtar work? Well, I know what you're going to say to me. Well, what's the difficult question? You look at the shtar, you read, you see the witness is signed, and that's how a shtar works. What's the problem with the shtar working? So you might know, from if you learn Chumash Rashi or from somewhere else, Al pi shnayim edim, mi pihem, v'lo mi pitzavim. Testimony cannot be given in writing. So how is it that a shtar works? A get does not akasha. The Torah says you write a get, step out. There are two kinds of shtaros in halacha. What are the two kinds of shtaros, generally speaking? Shtari raya and shtari kinyan. Sometimes a shtar, let me start in the reverse direction. Shtari kinyan and shtari raya. Sometimes a shtar's purpose is to affect a status change, to affect a transfer. Kiddushin, shtar kiddushin, a shtar gerushin. A shtar hafna'a, when you can buy a field in one of three ways. Kesef shtar hazaka. The shtar there doesn't refer to a deed that says I am a legitimate owner of the field. It happens to be that if I'm makdeh to you a field by a shtar, I say harei sadi kinui alach b'shtar zeh. The shtar may also serve as a shtar raya, but fundamentally the shtar transfers possession there. They're called shtari hakna, shtari kinyan. So that we understand that's exeris hakasav in each case, the kasav la sefer krisus. I don't know how we know exactly what the makar that a shtar can transfer karka, but those are shtari kinyan. And those shtaros, in theory, if as soon as the shtar does its purpose, a bird comes down, grabs it, and eats it, nothing changes. You might be lacking a raya, but the shtar is not in itself inherently necessary because it's done its work. Today, for example, when a woman gets a get, Is that the woman is divorced? Does any woman that you know have her get? And the answer is no. No woman you know has a get. You know what the basis does with the get after it's written and handed over? They tear it up for whatever reason. I don't know if they keep it in their archives. And they write the woman a patur. It says that such and such a woman identifies her, came in front of this basin. We wrote a get and did it for, and the dayanim signed on the back. If you ever become a rabbi and you masad a tradition and you ask the chassid of the kala, are there any divorces in your family? Any gear in your family? So if there's a divorce in the family, let's say a parent was divorced, a mother, you're not concerned if it was on the father's side, it doesn't really matter if it's just males all the way up. But if the person says their mother was divorced, or the father's mother was divorced, or the mother's mother was divorced, and they come from a subsequent marriage, obviously don't care what happens after their lineage has been established. So you ask, I want to see a copy of the Patur. I have any number of Paturim in my files, right? Of the situation which I did, because I need to see that, in fact, his mother or his grandmother was allowed to remarry to make sure that Chas V'Shalom is now Mamzerus. So, but she doesn't have the get. The answer, she doesn't need the get. The get did its job. And now she has this tour, which is a raya that she actually got divorced. So that shtar raya kenyan work, that's not a question. But the question is, how does the shtar raya work? Fine. Let's say I sold the field, however I sold the field to you, Nisim. And now you need proof that you bought the field from me. So you call it a shtar that says that these eidim say this field belongs to Nisim because he bought it for a beidah on such and such a day. That's very nice. But I can't hear the testimony of the eidim. It's mikiyam alon pitzavam. It's very nice that they wrote that. Who cares? So the Rambam writes in the Mishnah Torah that the whole institution of shtar is only the Bersoch. So he writes. So shtar is only worth the Rabbanu. That's what it sounds like. That shtari raya. I'm based on the Rabbanu. But most Rishonim disagree with the Rambam. There's a very important riff. There's a very important riff in Yevamos. I want to say, I'm trying to remember if it's Daf Lamed Aleph in the Gemara or Daf Lamed Aleph in the Daf HaRif. It's a very important riff there who talks about this particular question. And the riff makes the claim that the shtar, I think the way the riff position is, that the din of mipihem velo mipiksavam is only if the shtar is yotze mitachas yad ha'edim. But if it's yotze mitachas yad baldin, it's not a problem. Only if the Edom walk into court and hand the shtar, they're the ones in possession, that's Mithyam on Piksavam. But once the Baal Dabar has the shtar, that's not subject to Mithyam on Piksavam. I think the Baal Atosis have a different approach. I don't know if they're directly answering this question, but it does. That Mithyam below Piksavam is only a psul midaraisa if the Edom are not capable of testifying, if they're mute. But if the Edom is capable of testifying, then testifying even if Chad is okay. All sorts of answers, but it's an obvious question. Mithyam below Piksavam, how is the shtar going? Now, so the riff would say that Edom Hasuman al Ashtar Nasef Timisha Nechrei Dusum Beisim. When they wrote the Shtar, that is the time of the testimony. That's the time they gave testimony. It's not a problem. If you know, Piksavim. If you walk into Beisim, in a Beisim, and you want to say, and you want to give testimony, you want to write it in paper, that doesn't work. But a Shtar, which is his own thing, when that Shtar is written in Edom Sinai, Nasef Timisha Nechrei Dusum Beisim. It's a silent court session, and that's how it works. Now, what is this business of Kiyum Shtaros? I come and I say that Jake owes me $100, and I whip out the shtar, not a shtar, but I whip out my little piece of paper here, and it says, you can't read my handwriting, it says, Jake borrowed $100 from me. And Moshe and Yoni signed on it below. So so Jake starts screaming bloody murder. That. I never agreed to such a thing. And I said, look, I got the shtar. Now, it happens to be that Yoni and Moshe went on a hike. They're not here. So you say those are forgeries. So the halacha is that if you are towing mezuyah against the shtar someone pulls out, I now have to bring Kiyum HaShtar. I have to bring them. I have to bring somebody who recognizes their signatures, or if Basin has previous shtars that Moshe and Yoni have signed, have their signatures. It doesn't have to be the same shtar. It could be two shtars. And once I verify the signatures, now you have to pay up. But that's only if you're towing mezuyah. If you don't say mezuyah, we don't require Kiyum Shtaros. Question is, what happens if, in one of three scenarios, either you're not here, Jake, I come at the base of all the shtar, or, Chas V'Shalom, this is not about you, so I'm coming at someone else, and that person has died and I'm collecting from the Yorshim, or you have nothing to pay me back with. We're coming back to you now. you have nothing to pay me back with, but you've sold fields to other people, and I have a shibud, I have a lien on those fields. It was a halnova b'shtar, and you had land, so I get a shibud, I get a lien on those fields. If you can't pay me, if you have nothing to pay me, I can seize the field. So you're not here. You're not here to stay mezuyah. Now, the yisomim, in that case, or in your case, the lekuchos, or if you're just not here, so no one can be toy mezuyah. The lekuchos don't know. The yisomim, in that case, don't know. If you're not here, you're the only one who knows. So the question is, do we require the person to be metayim that shtar on the basis that the concern is mezuyah? Are we toying on behalf of the yisomim, on behalf of the lekuchos, mezuyah for now? This is a big machlokas harishon. In this case, by the get, while it's not about money, we are not toying mezuyah, clearly. In other words, when you bring a get in Eretz Yisrael, if someone comes to challenge it, the husband will challenge it, now we'll say we've got to verify the signatures. But if he didn't, as soon as this comes, before the husband has said a word, we don't know what he's going to say. He himself might be, he's on the other side of Eretz Yisrael, or he's in the next town. He hasn't said a word. So mishum iguna, mishum, they will make out to say you don't have to be Mekayim Dishtar before using it. But the question is, so is that exceptional or not? And Tosus here goes out of his way, stands on his head to try to demonstrate that mezuyah, we are toy mezuyah on behalf of Lekuchos, on the behalf of Yorshim, I'm Manik Shalom Bafana, only in this case by get with a makel. But if you take a look at Tosus, I think it's in Ksubos, Tosus seems to take a different approach, that in fact we're not toying on mezuyah on behalf of the people who are not there. So that's a very important question, but it's something to be aware of. This concept of Kiyam Shtaris. Be aware, and the Gemara says that if you may be seen, Daf Gimel, the whole institution of Kiyam Shtaris is only the Rabbanan. Because it's only the Rabbanan, there are many kulos, one of which is you are Makayim a Shtar Shalom B'fnei Baldin. Normally you cannot accept Egus against a person, against any of their interests, unless they are present, or at the very least have been given reasonable opportunity to be present. But Kiyam Shtaris, because the whole requirement is only Rabbanan, so Heimam of Eilam, they said that you don't need a Bafanav. I think there may be even a sheet in the Gemara, you could do Kiyam Shtaris for two. I think we're past in three. I'm not sure about that. But here, what Mishnah is saying, by a get, you do not, once you're not concerned about maybe getting a BSM, whatever the reason for that is, Rabban Rabba, so then we would say that we're not worried about Mizuyah. If the husband comes later in kindness, Mizuyah, so then different story. Right? I'm sorry, what's the? No, I think that this is the only time you're saying because it says it by. So the question might be, and this is an interesting question, I don't know the answer to this question, would the Rambam be Moda? Somebody might say this? No. Would the Rambam be Moda that by Shari Hakna'a, they also work as a Rai with their Isa? And as once they work for Kenyan purposes, they work for Rai as well, in which case that would do with your question. Okay. Fine. So now the Gemara says, my time. Why is it that maybe getting Dina Sayam has to say B'fayna Chodechon? So Rabba Amar, Lefi Shein B'kiyam Mishma, that a get has to be written Mishma, and as we'll see later, but you probably got there, but if you didn't, I'll tell you now, there's a machlokas, what we mentioned, the chasav lal mishma. There's a machlokas, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir, what does the chasav mean? Does the chasav refer to the writing of the get itself? Haret mutaris lachol adam, the shema isha meisha, or does the chasav refer to the signatures of the witnesses? Rabbi Meir believes, as we'll see, ksivas aget does not have to be the shema. If you found the get in the garbage, in the ashva, and it had the right names, and it's got today's date, or they haven't filled the date in yet, so you can fill it in right now. And then you bring it to Adam, and the Adam sign Lishma, and the get is given, it's 100% kashrut there, and the Gemara says it's good l'chatchila. The l'chatchila, you find that get, you're allowed to do it. Rabbi Elazar says that no, that Edei Hasima are totally unnecessary for a get. What is necessary are Edei Mesira. The Edim that make the get are the witnesses. And he says, the chasav is kachuta, it refers to the contents of the get itself. So there's a machlokes then between Rameh and Rabbi Elazar, what in the get has to be the shema? The ksiva or the chasima? And then as the Gemara will say, because if I didn't tell you this now, and if you hadn't seen it yet, you'll be in suspense the entire time for next week because we won't get there, is Rabbi Yehuda holds that both require lishma, siva and chasima, whatever the basis for that is. So Rabba says the reason why you need the aid and the seva fanechem is because because in Medina Sayam they're not bekiyim, apparently in this particular din. In lishma, they're not bekiyim. Rabbi Tam explains it's not that they're bekiyim. Rabbi Tam says it's that they once upon a time didn't agree. But they didn't think lishma, they didn't think that was chat and pasuk, chas avlah. And Gemara is going to talk about later how eventually they've learned. Right? They weren't bekiyim and then they learned. But to explain the question all the Rishonim ask is, why were they only concerned about this one detail of the get? There are like 600 other important details of the get. And they're only concerned about Shlomi Kiyam Lishma. So Tosfos says, I don't say that it's who I didn't, they gave it, the Rav is listing one, but who I didn't father things. He proves it from later in the sugya. It was only over the Shema. So Rabbi Natan says, because the Chasav Law wasn't Mashav, not that they weren't Amarat. No, they knew. But they didn't think that the Chasav Law really meant that it had to be the Shema. They didn't think that was Pshat. And La'acha Shalomdu doesn't mean that they were ignorant and now they learned. Once they came and were maskim to the drasha, so then later on, there really wasn't a concern in principle of Lishma. Okay, but either way, because they're not the key in Lishma. And again, now, the Gemara will talk about, well, it doesn't say B'fanai Niftab Lishma, B'fanai Niftab Lishma. So what are they accomplishing by saying B'fanai Niftab? The Gemara will talk about that later. Fine. Rabba Amar Lafisha Einei Mitzvah Nekamah. Rava says, because if you need to do Kiyam on the get, it's going to be very hard. Because if the Edom are in China, and the get is brought to Eretz Yisrael, so it's not so pashut to do Kiyam Shtaris, and if the husband challenges it, then we have a problem. We've got a problem here. That wasn't the reference to your hometown. Okay. It is, but you know what that reference comes from, I think. Some space thing, you know, when they... I don't know which, was it Powell 13 or something? You know, when you said we have a problem. Okay, so the bottom line is that Rava says, if you're going to, you know, we're not requiring Kiyam Shtaris immediately, but we need to at least have the potential for that, otherwise we're going to have a disaster. My Beinaya, what's the nafkamina between these two reasons? And I'll refine that question based upon a comment I think Tosos makes later. My Beinaya means, in what situations would one require but not the other? In what general situations would Rabba would say you have to say the formula, and Rabba would say you don't. And maybe situations which Rabba would say you do have to say the formula, and Rabba would say you don't. So the Gemara gives right now three, and when later, I'll spill the beans on this, just I don't want to keep you in suspense again. The Gemara later is going to say that Rabba is Moda, that both are concerns, Lishma and in Eidim Mitzvah Nekaimo, whereas Rava's not concerned about Lishma, is only concerned about Eidim Mitzvah Nekaimo. When the Gemara is there, it's going to drop one of these concerns. But right now, what are the three? What are the nafkamines? The Gemara says, number one, the Asuha Beitrei. So Rashi says that if two people bring the get and they're both Shluchim Lagarsha, so according to Rava, you still have to say Refanayifam, because you have to know it was written Lishma. Whereas according to Rava, it's not a concern of Ein Eidim Mitzvah Nekaimo because you have two Eidim right here. Yes, Jay?
When is the Baal coming to object?
Yes, but he comes 6 months from now.
Comes
he comes later. No,
how could they be Eidim if they're no Gehda Dalek?
Why are they no Gehda Dalek?
They're agents of the Baal, so...
Doesn't make them no Gehda Dalek? What is their built-in incentive? What do they gain from it?
More of a to the
Gemara does have a discussion in Kiddushin about the concept of Shliach Nasa Eid. But fundamentally speaking, it's not over, unless there is money involved. I'll tell you what is the conflict of interest. You as a Shliach, or even Shluchim, I send the two of you to bring money back and to pay back Ephraim the money I owe him. So there is potentially a conflict of interest there, because if you didn't do it, you owe me the money. But by the debt, there's no Gevedav, there's no Negias on their part. So Rashi makes it sound like these Eidim can be Mekayim Bishkar. And the Rishon don't like this for whatever reason, so they just say, no, if two Eidim come, they will say, the Baal sent us with this get. The end. It's not that they have to be in Mekayim signatures. Once they say, the Baal sent us with this get, the only thing the Baal could say is what? Yes, I did. But you know what? I got the Eidim to sign it falsely. So the Gemara has a very interesting comment there. The Gemara says, the Baal is not Matzah Makalkul Abideh Shamayim. It's a very just it's a very obvious observation, but it reminds me of something we did last year in Kit, which is there's a halacha that if you do hesed shenu nikar, let's say I'm accidentally metame your stuff, you have truma, and you're a kohen, no kohen, okay, pretend you're a kohen for a second. Okay, you always wanted to be a kohen, so you finally gave the rabbi enough money, you know the line. Okay, fine. Okay, so, there you go, but Maaser Rishon can be eaten b'tumah, so that's okay, that doesn't work out. But anyway, let's say you're a kohen, closest thing we have to a kohen, Jake, and I accidentally, I'm a tamei your truma. Now, it's a hezek shenikar, you can't tell the difference before and after. So the Mishnah says that b'shogeg, I'm potter, b'meisen, I'm chayiv. So the Gemara's machlokas, why? What's the din? Because midaraisa by nezek, it's either nezek or it's not nezek. You're either chayiv or you're potter. Right? You can't. There's no such thing by nezek as being miikar din, being potter b'shogeg chayiv b'meisen. Adam mo'ad la'olam. So the Gemara has a machlokas for Yochanan Chizkiah, and one of them says that really miikar hadin hezek shenikar vashli hezek, and you should be potter. So that's the real one. Chizkiah says, Meikar din yichayel. So why did they make you potter by shogeg? The answer is, Kadeshi yodi uhu. Because what's going to happen is I'm accidentally metame your truma, and oivei. But I just won't tell you, right? And you'll eat, it's tame, you don't know it. But I don't want to have to pay, so they potter me. So then the question is, I think the Gemara asks it, well, why then would they not potter you b'mezid so that the guy will tell you? Well, the answer is that if I'm going to be metame your truma mezid, I only do it to get the pleasure of telling you, haha, your truma is coming. But the idea that I'm going to do it, so on a metaphysical level, God's going to get you, because you had no idea that it was coming. You know, Chazal would say would be nenash when you eat that truma tzveya. Me for being metame, right? It's God. God is not this, simplistic legalistic entity who says, "Well, you did it." You know, we know that the person who's masha, the other person, is the one who really bears the responsibility. So the same thing could be said here. The husband is not going to, nimachtem edim l'shma, and then hand it over to her just to be mekalkel bidei shamayim. Because right, the two edim say, you gave us the get. It's not perfectly analogous, but that's what it kind of brings to mind. It's not going to be mekalkel bidei shamayim. Right? You only do this stuff if you can get the pleasure of torturing the other person. That's why you do it. Okay. So that's one nafkamina. According to Rava, you already have the husband can't challenge the get anymore. Be it for Rashi because they in the kind of signatures. Be it for the other Mishanim because the two edim have said the husband sent us the get. Case old, case closed. Whereas Rava would say it doesn't address the lishma issue. Inami mendin lamdina beretz Yisrael. If you bring it from one region Eretz Yisrael to the other, so lishma is not a concern because in all of Eretz Yisrael that became lishma, Rava would say you don't have to utter it the formula. But for Rava, if it's in two different areas, edim are not matziyim so much, and therefore you would say you need fanaynecha. And finally, inami ba'osa medina sayam. Let's say it's within one city, in medina. You're in New York City, so for Rava, if you bring it from Manhattan to the Bronx, so you have to say the fanaynecha because they might not be Bikim Lishma in Manhattan, they may be only the Bikim of the Bronx. And if it's Mishum Ainin Mitsum Kaimo, so people go from Manhattan to the Bronx all the time. So now the Gemara asks, and this is really, if we were doing this to Ian, we would spend a fair amount of time in this, I have to give you really the kitzer. Ularaba the Omar Lafisha in Bikim Lishma, Liboitre, Midi to have a call Ibio Shabatora. That's probably the correct Gersa. Because this mentions another Gersa Akal, Arayo Shabatora. This is probably the correct Gersa, that's what Tosus thinks. Why is one aid sufficient? For Eidos, you need two Eidim. So if you need Eidos, that the get was written in the Shema, then why is one Shaliach allowed to say B'Fanecha V'Nechtam and be satisfy our requirement? Now, the Maskanas HaGemara, as Tosus points out, is the whole question is not a question, because the Ikar Hadin, you don't need, it's just a Hashash V'Alma, that maybe some base there wasn't Baki L'Shema. So really, you don't need anything. The get itself is more proof. It's more proof in the world than anything else in the world. No question about that. But right now, the Gemara is taking it seriously. So the Gemara says, "Why do you require three eidim?" So the Gemara answers, "Eid echad nema bisur." How do you know eid echad is nema bisur? Isim. Do you eat the food your mother prepares? You trust her. What? How can you trust her? Number one, she's only one person preparing. Number two, she's a woman. She's two ladies. So I start. The answer is, Eidachan is Nemem Bisun. It's not Midin Eidus. If it were Midin Eidus, then you wouldn't believe in Isha. But Eidachan Nemem Bisun is, what's the mock of Eidachan Nemem Bisun? So Tosfos points out, the Safra Lah, a woman, how do Jewish men and Jewish women ever cohabit? The woman becomes an Eidah, how does he know that? She did the Bikos and that she went to the mikvah. Does your wife have to go to the mikvah, come home and bring a signed statement with two Eidim that she went to the mikvah? That she did count the, who knows that she counted the Shemini Kiyum, or that what the rice of it, so there's the bleeding stuff. How do you know? The answer is, Yisafra Allah le'atzma, Eidachan is Neman Bisun. Now, there's one major question the Gemara has in Yevamos, the opening Sugya of Isha Rabbah, the 10th parak, that deals with Eidachan of Aguna, of Meis Baila. And that is, does that apply only when Ischazik Yisura, only when not, lo Ischazik Yisura not? I walk into a table, and there's a piece of meat there. I can't tell whether it's chayla or shuma. I can't tell whether it's kosher or tzreif. There's no chazaka one way or the other. So if an eidecha tells me it's kosher, then I can believe that. What happens if it's chazik yisura? What happens if there is a cheskas yisur? For example, let's say any of you have a garden in your house, even if you don't garden. Okay. I used to have a garden. So let's say that Yoni has a garden. We've got a garden, and let's say garden. You plant things in a garden, okay? And let's keep this straight up. Let's pull this right. Yoni lives in Eretz Yisrael. We transported Eretz Yisrael, and land is kedusha and shumas on Eretz Yisrael, and he plants a grapevine, and grapes grow, wonderful. And then he squeezes the grapes, and we have grape juice, and we have wine. Now, here's the problem. Yoni's not around. Ephraim tells me that Yoni separated from Samaisus from the wine. Is Ephraim believed? So Gemara's not sure. If Yoni tells me that he separated grapes, wine, and Samaisus, he's believed. Why? Because he could do it now. It's Biyada. That's one of the exceptions. But let's say it's not Biyada. And it's Ischazik Yisur. Now, how do we know it's Ischazik Yisur here? Well, because all produce that grows from the ground and gets processed, I'm oversimplifying here, but is Teva. That's how it starts out its life. Now, the question is, would Trumas and Maisa separate from it? But the Chazaka is an Issa. So the question is Ephraim believed? The Gemara never actually comes to a Maskana there. The Gemara in Ha'isha Rabbah, on the first Amar Aleph, and get that big test, and Ches Amar Aleph, never comes to a Maskana whether or not an Eidecha Nema Bisur works when it's Chazak Yisur, and it's not B'yada. By Nida, even if it's a chazik yisur, it's b'yada. She has control, she can count her, and it's also, the dam is going to stop normally, and she can go to the mikvah. The question is, what about by this chazik yisur? And this case, is a case here by Gittin, is this chazik yisur. Now, there is a step, the Rashba points out here, and I think Tosis is assuming this also, the Gemara here actually is asking two separate questions. The Gemara asks, Eimor dami nani nachana medisurin, kigon chaticha safek, shochelev safek, shoshum, and the lois chazik yisurah, what the Gemara has done here, and the Rashba says explicitly, is has hybridized two things. There are two separate issues here. Even if you were to come to the Maskana, the Gemara Yevamos, and somebody showed me, I think the Ramban says, Vipaska Makula. Even if you claim that the Maskana is that an Eidachar is never Visura, even when it's a Chazak Visura, Dovah Sheva Erva might be different. Dovah Sheva Erva might be different. Davar Sheva Erva, even though it's a kind of Issa, it might be more Chamer and it might require Eidus. Now, I haven't seen any of the Rishonim explain why, but there is one case where Yediyah, knowledge of something, is absolutely insufficient, no matter how certain you know it, even if God comes and tells you himself, doesn't matter if there were no Eidus. There's only one thing. What is that? You could probably even have a video camera, and it doesn't matter. Anyone know what that is? Ephraim? What?
To arrive something?
No. Kiddushin.
I was
going to
say, Chuck, like the Gemara Moment, see, I talked about, like, what was
Oh no, you're correct. God doesn't get an opinion there, but this is access to law. This is the facts. The fact that The man says he married the woman. He gave her a ring for kiddushin. They swear up and down. It could even have been eid echad. Doesn't matter. That davar shebe erva absolutely categorically requires eidus makil hadavar. It's not clear that you have that anywhere else. You might have it by gittin. Right? Gittin either requires eide chasima or eide mesila. We're going to have to talk about that. That's a big sugya. A very big sugya. We'll deal with that in Yom. We'll touch upon it here, but we'll deal with it in Yom. So, it is possible that davar shebe erva is a separate category. So the Rashba says here, number one, eid echad nami bisurim may only be when it's lowest chazak isura. And here the woman has a cheskas eishasi, she's asura, so it doesn't help you. And number two, it's also a davar shebe erva. And a davar shebe erva might categorically require two witnesses. So the Gemara says, rov the kin heim, most sofer adayanim, they know get has to be written the Shema. Now, v'afilu the Rabbi Meir d'chayei shlemiuta, stam safrei d'dayone, migmar gemire. Now, Rabbi Meir has an interesting shita. He never states this explicitly. It's the Gemara's formulation. Rabbi Meir is chayei shlemiuta. Normally, midaraisa, we follow a rov. Even when we're machmir, we're only machmir for a mir hamatzoi in some cases, a common minority, whatever, however you fix that percentage. But a mir cheno matzoi, we are not choshesh for. When we do bedikos on animals, just know whether they're a trefa or not after we do shnita, how many categories of trefas are there? How many psulim of trefas are there? 18. How many of them do we check for? One. What do we check? The lungs. The lungs don't have adhesions because they might have been holes that seized up. We check the sirchas in the rea, sirchas in the lung. Why don't we check the other 17? The answer is they're very uncommon. So unless we have a reason to assume the animal is trefa, you're not obligated to do bedikah. But the lungs are mir hamatzoi, the sirchas in the lungs, and therefore the takana is that we do bedikos on it. Fine. Rabbi Meir was choshesh even for odd mutant. What's the case for Meir's choshesh for? So if you have a minor, katan or katana, where they are involved in a situation where the husband dies without children. So either he has a younger brother who's a katan, or his wife is a katana, but let's say her father married her off, so the kiddushin are the raisa. The question is, can you have yivam done? So chalitza you can't do with the katan or katana, it's a zeres hakasa. But what about yivam? Yivam doesn't require any kind of das, it's just a maisa. As opposed to kiddushin bia requires das. Yivam, because there's already a bond between the brother and the wife of the deceased. There's a zika. You don't require das. Yibum done ba'ones, b'shogeg, is good. It's not mutter to do it ba'ones, but it's binding, it's kona. And now the woman is now the full-fledged wife of the brother who did the yibum. So the chachamim say, a katan or tana can't do yibum. They can't do chalitza, but they can do yibum. The mayor says, we don't allow a katan or tana to do yibum. You know why? Because if we have a brother who happens to be a saris. He's someone who is a eunuch, not because he was castrated physically, but because we call shrischam. You know, it's not chemical castration, but he will never reach puberty, some type of a hormonal disorder. A saris is not allowed to be yivam. And if he does, it's a violation of erva dorais of eshesach, because there's no mitzvah. If the only brother, by the way, living is a saris, the woman doesn't even need chalitza or anything. So the saris you just take out of the picture. Similarly, an ayilonis, if the woman has a hormonal disorder, there is no yibum or chalitza with her. And if you do yibum, it's a violation of eshesach d'oraisa. Rabbi Meir says a katan and tana you're not allowed to yibum on because katan shema yimatzei saris and tana shema yimatzei ayilonis. It might be when they grow up, it turns out that they're in this category. Such chashash lachok. So Rabbi Meir's choshesh and the Rabbanan are not. That's the klal, the Gemara derives from that brisa about katan katana by yibum and chalitza, nachot shuri nachacham, and it's a klal that they apply in a lot of other places. So the Gemara says, afil Rabbi Meir dechayin shlemita stam safrei d'dayanei migmar gemire. What does that mean? How does that answer the question? Tosfos says it because it's considered a miuta de miuta. If the percentage is so small, even Rabbi Meir's know that. Okay. So the Gemara says, Rabbanon hu da'atzuch, the only reason why you have to have anybody say the Shema in the first place, is the chashash that the Rabbanon had. We're afraid. Rashi says we're afraid. that a husband is going to find a shtar written in the garbage with his name, his wife's name. The way Rashi says, he makes trouble for himself. I don't know, what's the expression here? He buys trouble. Rashi says, because maybe there were two Yosef and Shimon's in the ear, married to Rachel Basleas in the ear, and the get was written for the other guy, and then this guy finds it and wants to use it. He creates a tzaras himself for that. Just say, the sofer was practicing, and he wrote the get this way. But this guy, you know, this guy with a unique name, you know, Fabian Gregory was his name, and nobody else has that name, you know, the whole Confluence of Aretz. The sofer was just practicing, he was having so much fun with it. So you know, there's no true Yosef and Shimon's in the ear, but the chashash is maybe the sofer practiced with that name, and therefore maybe the husband found it and used it. That's why you say, that was the chashash the Rabbanon had, and therefore, the hacha, mishum iguna atir Rabbanon. They didn't require two witnesses to override the chashash. One witness was sufficient. So then the Gemara says, haikula, you're not really doing her any favors. If you require two witnesses, then the woman will never have to worry about the husband passing. Whereas if you require only one witness, then the husband can turn around later and pass it. Now Tosus here has two bears. I don't know if it's in this or in the next line when it's in Rabbah, questioning whether it really means he can passel it or just he can emotzi laz and make her life unpleasant. Either way, the Gemara says you'd be doing her a favor if you would require two witnesses. So the Gemara answers no. Kevan da Amar Mar, later in the Arperek, we will have a machloka samurai. How many people does the shaliach have to say b'fanai nechlam, b'fanai nechlam in front of? Normally, on a regular get, if you don't need to say b'fanai nechlam, b'fanai nechlam, how many people do you need there to be for the Mesira? Two, for Ede Mesira, this is the coin for Velasa. Question is, when you have to say b'fanai nechlam, b'fanai nechlam, do you need two sufficient, or do you need a base? Then a three. So machlokas of Yochanan and Mechanina, charam and mefesh, shnayim, charam and mefesh, shalom. So once you have to have this procedure in front of these people, meikara, made a guy for Velasa, they're not sure. Once he's going to have to come in front of these people, act in almost in the capacity as base, and even the two, and say b'fanai nechlam, b'fanai nechlam, then that is, he's going to take it really seriously, and therefore, the Baal is not going to come to him in our, and even if he is, we're going to ignore him. That's what Rashi says. Okay, so this was the first day, this was Rava's opinion, and next week we will pick up with Rava's opinion. Any questions about the Gius?